Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. How do you know when you're getting old? Bob Hope reportedly said, when the candles cost more than the cake. And we might add, when you know who Bob Hope was. We might joke about it, but for most of us, the only good thing to say about getting old is that it beats the alternative. So when New York Times reporter John Leland took the assignment of following the lives of six New Yorkers who were part of the growing cohort of those 85 and above, he expected to visit grim settings and write sad stories. Reality turned out a little different, and he ended up not only more hopeful about what the future might hold for any of us who get to that age, but feeling better about life today, regardless of your age. His new book, drawing on that New York Times series, is called Happiness is a Choice You Make, Lessons from a Year Among the Oldest Old. And he joins me now. John Leland, welcome back to WNYC.
Oh, thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So you followed six of New York's oldest old, and they weren't necessarily living it up at their advanced ages. They had health problems and limitations of various kinds. How did you choose your six?
Oh, I wanted some diversity. So there's gay people and straight people. There's black, white, and Asian people. There's a retired civil servant and an artist who's still working. That's Jonas Mekas, the filmmaker. There's a guy who never settled down and a woman who never dated again after she lost her husband of 50 years. And there's a new couple who met in a nursing home.
Huh. And I guess if there's a unifying surprise in the book, maybe it's that they had all found other paths to happiness beyond what might have given them pleasure or meaning younger in life?
Yeah, they all had problems. I'm never saying in this book that old age doesn't come with problems. It does. But none of the people define themselves by these problems. Only other people did. They couldn't do some of the things they used to do, but they defined their lives really by the things they could do, not what they had to give up.
And so your takeaway in a certain sense is if you want to be happy, learn to think like an old person?
Yeah, if you want to be happy, you have to choose happiness. You can't wait for the circumstances to bring it to you because circumstances, as we all know, whatever age you are, go up and down.
So what do you mean choose happiness, which is basically the title of the book, Happiness is a Choice You Make? I think all kinds of self-help books might come out with a framing like that, but you're applying it to people 85 plus who are dealing with physical limitations imposed by aging.
Well, one thing I would turn around is I'm not applying it to them. They taught it to me. I saw that this is what they were doing.
Uh-huh.
They weren't concentrating. You know, you can go to I say this in the book, you can go to a museum and say, I'm confined to a wheelchair with a group of half-deaf older people. Or you can go to that same museum and say, Michelangelo. And it's the difference. That's the choice we can make. There's going to be bad things in our lives, however old we are. And we have the choice about whether we let them blot out all the other things that we have in our life, or we cannot do that.
So listeners, are you in this age bracket? Do you agree that you don't have time for misery, as John puts it, or one of his people puts it at one point in the book? Do you maybe work with people 85 plus? Are you a caregiver for someone in this age group? Does John Leland's experience, as we're hearing it so far, echo your own? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or to the point that John was just making, have you learned something important, a life lesson for yourself if you're younger, from somebody who's over 85, something along the lines of happiness is a choice you make for yourself at a younger age from experiencing life with the oldest among us? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And when it comes to caregivers, John, that includes you, right? You write about how you changed your take on some of your attitudes after this project?
Yeah, my mother's 89 and she's in a wheelchair herself. And, not an upbeat 89. You could be a young and tennis playing 89 or you could be the other side. And for a long time, I thought when I visited her, I was doing something for her. And I began, because I was seeing all these other people, I didn't think, well, I don't need to change that person. And so I don't need to try to change my mother. I don't need to want her to be more upbeat or to exercise or change her life around. I'm as fascinated by spending my time with her as I am with other people. And it just really opened up our relationship and really improved it.
So do you think caregivers run the risk of wanting the older person to be like they were, while maybe an outside caregiver can meet them as they are?
Yeah, because we're never going to succeed in that. If you want your parents to get young again, they're not going to do it.
Who do you think the book will speak to most directly? Those who are living this life because they're in the age group, or those who are starting to come up against the physical limitations of aging for the first time and maybe freaking out about their own futures, or maybe others?
Oh, I'm afraid that people in the age group that I'm writing about are just going to say, geez, finally you get it. Now you understand. But I think it's for more for people that are younger than that, maybe my age, I'm 58, who are thinking about their old age and maybe they're not looking forward to it, because none of us really looks forward to being old. But if we're not afraid of it, then we can imagine like a desirable future for ourselves. And I think our lives can be better now for it.
Let's take a phone call. Here's Helen in Queens. Helen, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Listen to WNYC every day.
Thank you.
I will be 89 in March. I lost my husband a couple of years ago, and I am now in a large apartment house complex with many people of different ages. And from experience in life, I believe that my purpose in life at this time is to make everybody I meet feel better. I have a lot of knowledge of alternative medicine, and it seems like every day I have an opportunity to help people. And when I meet somebody, I give them a big smile. I used to work as activities director in a nursing home, and I know how important that is. So I feel at this time in my life, it is my job to make everybody else feel better. And of course, when I make somebody else feel better, I feel good too.
Can I ask, Helen, if the purpose that you feel, the sense of purpose that you were just describing,
did it
come upon you at a certain age in a certain way, or is it something you more or less always had?
I think I grew into it. I did not have an easy life. But I did end up, every time I did a good deed, my profession changed. Mm. So one of the things I did was work in a nursing home helping people.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me feel so good to know that I could help people. And I worked with people who needed help. And I did sing-alongs. I made them feel good, even if they didn't have all their marbles. And I feel very blessed that I have the knowledge to help people in different ways.
And it sounds like a lot of people must feel very blessed that they're coming in contact with you. So, Helen, thank you very much. And John Leland, I think she touches on one or two themes of your book. One is about sense of purpose.
Right. The subtitle of the book is Lessons from a Year Among the Oldest Old. And one of the lessons comes from Jonas Mekas, and that's the importance of living with purpose. And we've seen that living with purpose, having a sense of what mark you want to make in the world, will improve your health, improve your outlook, and have physical attributes even down to the cellular level, that people who say they have a sense of purpose don't develop the cognitive loss that people that do, that don't have a sense of purpose do.
In your book, you find a lesson on living well from each of the six people, 85 or older, who you profile. Let's go down a few of these anyway and introduce a few of your folks to our listeners. You want to start maybe with Fred?
Oh, Fred's hilarious. Fred, every time I saw Fred, he made me feel better. And Fred was 87 when I met him. He was in the process of losing parts of two toes to an infection that was turning into gangrene. but he was always in a good mood, and he had a dirty story every time I told him, and he'd tell me about the flashy suits he used to wear, and said he was a bon vivant, and he wanted me to fix him up with one of these fine chicks I knew. And Fred, you know, he had a hard life. He was living in this apartment he couldn't take care of. He couldn't manage the stairs. And when I asked Fred his favorite time of the day, he always said, waking up in the morning and saying, thank God for another day, on my way to 110. So Fred was like a graduate seminar in gratitude, which I never really understood fully what that word meant. I'd always heard it, but I really learned it from Fred.
Another one is Ping. Tell us about Ping.
Ping Wang, Chinese woman from Hong Kong. Ping says, when you're old, you have to make yourself happy. And so she was really clear about happiness being a choice. And Ping lived on $700 a month, and she couldn't afford her pain medication. So she'd tear her lidocaine patches in half to make them last longer. But she also, she played mahjong with the same people every day and said it made her feel young, and that her life was better now than when she was young and working in Chinatown and commuting on a crowded bus from Staten Island and taking care of her family.
How about John?
John Sorensen. John was a sad case. John had lost his partner, Walter, of 60 years. And every time I saw John, he said he wanted to die. And what I learned from John was that acknowledging death, because we are all going to die, and really living with it as a presence and not something that happened to other people, could enable you to live a fuller life. Because even though John always was very clear that he wanted to die, he was kind of happy in the moment. You asked if you were to ask him, do you wish you died yesterday? He would say, no, you're here. Or do you wish you'd die tomorrow? And he'd say, no, Anne's coming tomorrow.
That's quite a paradox, wanting to die, but not now.
Well, the scary thing was a long period of time in front of him and a long decline. If you told him he had 3 days to live, he'd be like, hot damn. But if you told him he had 3 years to live, he might say, that's a little too long. And if you told him he had 13 years to live, he would throw you out of the studio.
Vasily in Clifton, you're on WNYC with John Leland. Hi, Vasily.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in my early 20s. I'm lucky enough that I've had all four of my grandparents, still have all of them into their late 80s. And I suppose the best lesson I've learned actually for me and for my peers, people who are younger, from my grandparents is simply that right now the things that we take for granted will go. And I suppose the point being that if, you know, right now we develop the kind of habits where things are for us, where we derive all of our meaning from our own satisfaction, our own personal gratification, whatever it may be, rather than sort of a selfless communal meaning, then, you know, when we do get to the point where we are in our 80s, as I see my grandparents right now, and we are humbled by just life, circumstance, health, whatever it may be, you know, it is very hard to hold on to that because it goes. So that's, you know, and I'm sure this has sort of been covered, but thank you very much.
Well, I'm sure that there are many listeners thinking now, that is a lot of wisdom for a caller who just said he's in his early 20s about community and about perspective from, from having your four grandparents and from, did you say living with your grandparents?
For a time, I lived with two of my grandparents who needed a little extra help, yes.
Vasily, thank you so much. John, you're smiling.
I love that. And I have to say that we buried the lead in this conversation a little bit, which is that I'm the last person who would ever write a book about happiness. I'm like a total grump. But meeting these people has really changed me. And one of the things that's been really helpful to me, and this is something Vasily touched on, is imagining what a good life at 80 or 85 would be, because we're probably going to get there. Looking at life expectancies, once you get to be my age, you'll probably get there. Probably won't be totally broken down. But if you imagine what it is, what kind of community you want, what's going to give you pleasure then, and then work your way backward, you can think, well, gee, a lot of that stuff is available to me now, or the path to that is available to me now in ways that maybe if in 10 years you want to be the president of the studio, that path may not be available to you right now.
My guest is New York Times correspondent John Leland, whose new book is Happiness is a Choice You Make, Lessons from a Year Among the Oldest Old, and we'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with John Leland, author of Happiness is a Choice You Make, Lessons from a Year Among the Oldest Old. I'm thinking about how some of these six people who you profiled illustrate possible outcomes for New Yorkers in particular. Fred had a pension and a rent-stabilized walk-up, which kept him stuck at home more and more. I guess the kind of golden handcuffs of having a rent-stabilized apartment that you can afford. And Ping had no savings, but therefore qualified for low-cost senior housing and home attendance. Maybe that's a housing paradox. Then there's Ruth's story, another New York housing dilemma, including, you know, having to leave her assisted living facility in Park Slope when it was sold for luxury housing. I think we covered that story at the time as a news story, and she had to move. That's traumatic at any age. These are New York stories.
Yes. One of the lessons in the book is that if you're in New York, being over age 85 or age 90 doesn't isolate you from the housing market. The housing market is still bigger than the force of time.
Sheila in the West Village, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, I'm glad to be talking to you.
So glad you are, too.
So what I told the screener is that I'm 85 in 3 months, and I'm doing the best paintings I've ever done in my life, and I'm going to have a show soon. And I'm very, very lucky because I've got this really good burst of health and this at my age, and I'm really working very hard, and it's very exciting. That's my whole story.
That's a good story. Thank you very much. Did you want to say something?
That's a great story as well. And again, that's like you envision what the good life can be. If it's painting, you can do that. If it's windsurfing, it might be a little bit harder for you to get there.
David in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good, thanks for taking my call. My piece was, I had a traumatic brain injury in 1976, so I'm 59, the same age as your guests around. And in any case, I went through 33 years, of difficulties with life and having achievements in life before I learned through this day program about the long-term deficits of a traumatic brain injury. And in 1976, it would have been easy to say, I think, that, I can't do these things now, and you just stay there. And as a result, that's where your life, will go. But I have had a lot of achievements and things to be proud of, and I'm in a different place as a result. So I so agree with, what your guest is saying, because it is a choice, and you kind of can be where you're going to be if you just want to be angry or be...
Yeah. So there's something about accepting new limitations and finding a new path to happiness within those confines.
Yeah, yes, thank you for saying that. One of the things with this TBI is that I am very... I don't say things curtly or to the point. And you really summarized what I was struggling to say a lot in a lot less words.
Well, thank you. And it's not to disparage how you said it at all. People tell their stories, and then, people of any age and whatever, I kind of sometimes just like sum them up. but there's in a way, the opposite lesson than the one you're drawing primarily in the book, I think. Saying that the lesson about how to be happy is really for the younger people, because the older folks who you interviewed are just finding their way. David sounds like somebody who really had a very serious injury that affected his brain, and he had to make a conscious adjustment, and he did.
I think that's great. And what's true about older people and younger people is that we all have limitations. Our bodies won't do things we wish they could do. Maybe they used to do them, and they don't anymore, or maybe they just never will. And what the elders did, who experienced that really like front and center, was they didn't let that deter them from enjoying the things that they could do. And I think the caller was the same way.
Jack in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jack. Jack, you there? Jack's not there. Let's try Caroline. Caroline, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
I can.
Thank you for taking my call. My parents are 88, and I just want to say, give a shout out to their amazing caregivers who are a huge part of their happiness. They act as a team together. They are part of the family. We get their favorite foods for them. They get my parents' favorite foods for them. We buy puzzles. We keep them like really happy doing what they like to do as well, while they do a great job for our parents. And I just want to say that they're lucky enough to have these wonderful caregivers, but the fact that we have accepted them and they're part of the family now is a big part of the happiness factor in the apartment.
Caroline,
and also my parents are both non-judgmental of each other. They applaud each other's accomplishments, and they're, even though they both become more and more physically limited, they get out together, and they are nice to everyone, including the ice cream man, the taxi driver, the doorman, and that the respect is returned. And everyone's just very happy because, as you say, they choose happiness.
So much for the grumpy old man, grumpy old woman stereotype, right? Caroline, thank you very much. I know at least one other family personally where the caregiver of someone who was in decline really became a part of the family. I know it doesn't always work out that well, but those stories are out there.
Caregivers are the hero of this thing. And Carolyn, I want to thank you for this because I want to say big shout out to Oma, my mother's caregiver, who is the hero of our family life.
Wonderful. Let's see if we can get one more in here. Michael in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael. We've only got about a half a minute, but hi.
Okay, great. Well, I just want to tell you that my parents are an inspiration to me. My father's going to be 93. My mom's 87. And my father still reads the New York Times every day, listens to your show, runs down to the Brooklyn Bridge Park when the weather's nice, and talks to visitors from all over the world, and shows them pictures of the Depression era. And he's a veteran of World War II. I'm very proud of him.
Michael, thank you very much. So, John, how did your readers respond to this series? I could imagine a whole range of responses from, I don't want to put words in their mouths. What were the biggest patterns?
Well, a lot like your listeners. And it was a wonderful thing. It was just the greatest thing about writing this series was people would write in and tell me about the amazing older person in their life. That was the most common response. And others, a small number of people wrote in and said, "You're full of beans. I never want to get old. And when I'm 80, I'm throwing myself off that bridge." And they were like a minority viewpoint that I have to say, I understand it. I just don't want to think that way anymore.
Well, come back when you're 120 and we'll see how it's working out for you.
I'll be there.
John Leland's new book is Happiness is a Choice You Make, Lessons from a Year Among the Oldest Old. He will be reading from the book this evening at the Barnes & Noble on the Upper West Side, Broadway and 82nd Street at 7 o'clock, and Thursday at the Brooklyn Historical Society, 128 Pierpont Street, at 6:30, and two readings coming up. Thank you so much.
Thank you.